This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
You're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn and Xiaoning. Now, in about half an hour, we're going to be speaking with Dr. Virinderjit Singh, Chairman of Axel Asia and President of the Malaysian Institute of Certified Public Accountants, about the government's tax collection target. But in the meantime, let's talk about cars. Because following a potential restructuring of auto duty rates by the government, locally assembled vehicles could cost more. So this is a source story from The Star, and sources told them that with the excise duty Gazette released on the 31st of December, completely knocked down vehicles or CKD vehicles will most likely be liable to pay more taxes, potentially leading to a price hike.
However, it is unclear how the new rates may affect the overall duties for cars. Now, in the Pakatan Harapan manifesto, there was a promise to reduce the excise duty on imported cars below 1,600cc engines for the first-time car buyers with household incomes below 8,000 ringgit a month. On another note, the long-awaited revised national automotive policy has yet to be announced. And I think this is supposed to revamp the entire auto industry. Mm-hmm. There have been many questions about this. And it's not just about the making of cars, but also the auto parts. Everything is related, right? And that was supposed to be released in the fourth quarter last year, but has now been pushed to be announced, hopefully, early 2020, because this is not the first time it's been delayed.
Yeah, so I think in last year, in about the third quarter of last year, if I'm not mistaken, I spoke with Dato' Madani Sahari of MARI. So that's the Malaysian Automotive Robotics and IoT Institute. And we did have a discussion on what they expected to see out of the NAP, because MARI is one of the bodies involved in drafting it. And at the time also, they said that they were on track for the fourth quarter release, but that has clearly not materialised. So hopefully we will get to see it sometime soon. If you want to listen to that conversation, you can find it on the BFM app as well as on Spotify. But of course, recently, the Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng announced that the Finance Ministry and the International Trade and Industry Ministry were in discussions to restructure car import duties. Now, they have a joint committee from both ministries studying the issue. Last year, MITI said that it might be looking at a reduction in excise duties for vehicles, which would have resulted in lower prices for cars. But it did add that though the government would be collecting less in excise duties, it could be compensated by higher sales volumes.
So now I'm confused.
It seems like a bit of a turnaround now, yeah, if this source story is correct.
So are car prices going up or car prices coming down? Or no, I think this is, of course, only in relation to CKD cars. Mm-hmm. So cars which are made in Malaysia, or sometimes impacting also those made in ASEAN, because they do benefit from this ASEAN auto policy and some tariff subsidies.
Yes, and we are also running a poll on this morning on the BFM Twitter account. We're asking you, if there is a price hike on locally assembled cars, would this affect your decision to buy a car in 2020? Now, if you have an opinion on this, do tell us what you think. We've had about 30 votes so far. 65% of them have said yes, 24% said don't care, 10% said don't know, and we've got a grand total of 0 votes for no, it won't affect their decision to buy a car in 2020. But of course, we also have a bit of a other side to an automotive story this morning, specifically that the Finance Minister, Lim Guan Eng, has also said the government will be continuing with Proton Perdana as their official cars instead of the Toyota Velfire. Interesting announcement, especially in the wake of all the backlash they received from the news that they would be looking at Velfires.
Especially on social media, which mm-hmm. is something we discussed this morning, right? Basically, they considered the second option because there was adequate supply of Proton Perdana cars. There was initially talk that there weren't enough, so hence they had no choice to use Velfire, but that's not the case. Guan Eng said that when the contract for supply of official cars was announced, it initially couldn't confirm that there were enough Proton Perdanas to meet the government's request. He added that the Proton Perdana, especially the limousine used by ministers, was no longer in production. So when we said, and this is Lim Guan Eng's words, we were sticking to Proton Perdana, they have to build separately, meaning that there is no guarantee in terms of supply. But to me, you're a Malaysian minister. Drive a Malaysian car. After all, we should champion our own Malaysian auto industry, right? So, of course, if you can't get enough Perdanas, there's also always the X70.
I mean, the X70 is the one that was also put together following the Geely
joint venture.
But so still, it's debatable. You know, it's debatable. Is it a Malaysian car?
Well, it is. I mean, they still Malaysia still owns the majority stake. I mean, if you want, you can also still be in a MyV, right? Doesn't mean that you have the minister. You have to drive a limousine. Maybe it's a faster way to get around, and you can go incognito when you need to go for your meetings.
And imagine how easy it would be to find parking at those really crowded minister events if you were just driving
a little MyV. Yes, and how much money you can save also.
Indeed. Now, speaking of money, though, the world is moving towards a cashless society. And our finance minister has also weighed in on this, saying that Malaysians should be given an option to choose between cashless transactions and cash payments when dealing with government agencies. So he's noted that personally, he prefers to pay in cash since he's more inclined towards the traditional type and it's hard to believe in digital transactions. And also, you know, there is the fact that the rural folk and the older generations are still not used to it, and it should therefore be done in phases. Now, I find this quite amusing that the finance minister is coming out to say that he's of a more traditional type. And despite the fact that we're seeing this push towards cashless societies, he still prefers to use cash because you should be leading by example. But then, you know, this is the reality also on the ground, right?
Yeah. I mean, he's also the finance minister that announced in when tabling budget 2020 that Malaysians who earn 100,000 and below would get a 30 ringgit deposit in their e-wallet, right? But he, on the other hand, is inclined towards cash. But I think some of his points are valid. We shouldn't assume that everybody is going to embrace e-wallet. After all, we had this discussion in many other shows before whether, you know, like as banks move towards digitalization and even banks reduce the number of counter staff, forcing everyone to use ATMs. For some people, there is this phobia. And also, let's admit it, you know, some generations, they just don't like going to an ATM. They find it an extremely scary option.
My grandmother finds ATMs very terrifying. And I find it terrifying also going to an ATM with her because she is the kind of person that will walk up to the ATM and as she's inputting her PIN number, she reads out the numbers aloud. So she'll be going, 1... 2. I'm just like, no, Amma, you shouldn't be doing this. Let me do it for you instead.
No, but now you know her PIN number, though.
I do, but you know, at least I'm her granddaughter. I don't want everyone else, you know, every Tom, Dick and Harry to also know her PIN number. But this is something that we have seen talked about in the US because the US, certain some states in the US are also really embracing this move towards cashless societies. So you see supermarkets, for example, that have gone completely cashless, which means that if you don't have a smartphone or something with access to an e-wallet, and if you are also unbanked or underbanked, you have a problem because you won't be able to do simple things like get your groceries or even in some cases get on the bus because they no longer have a cash option. And there is the conversation about accessibility that has to be had when we are talking about moving towards this towards a cashless society.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's inevitable that this is happening. But at the same time, we also cannot neglect people who perhaps have some resistance towards embracing it. So simultaneously, there also has to be some sort of literacy program or kind of examples on telling people the ease of use or getting over their issues, right? And maybe perhaps this move towards giving every Malaysian earning $100,000 and 100,000 ringgit and below the 30 ringgit is part of that so that you would actually sign up, right, for this. And at this current juncture, there are these three companies that are involved in the e-wallet mobile phone application that the government is giving under the e-Tunai Rakyat. So there's Touch and Go, Boost, and of course Grab. But everyone needs to have the e-wallet account on the supported provider. You need to register with your IC. Otherwise, you're not eligible.
Yeah, and so this initiative is given to all Malaysians aged 18 and above with an income of less than 100,000 ringgit per annum. And when can you redeem the 30 ringgit? It actually starts on the 15th of January, between the 15th of January and the 14th of March. Do note, though, that you have to spend that 30 ringgit by the 15th of March or the money will expire after that date. Now, I think this is a overall a good initiative, right? Because it does encourage Malaysians to adopt cashless and digital payments, and it does encourage them to get over that initial bump of
fear, right?
Because once you start, then it becomes a lot easier. But of course, sometimes the question is, does it become too easy? Because we Malaysians, we like to spend on our
and you don't monitor,
and it is actually quite easy to just kind of go ahead with it and swipe and not have a real kind of a real feeling of how much money you're spending.
So maybe the idea is to not make sure that you don't have too much money in these e-wallets.
Perhaps so.
Right? And be very strict with yourself in terms of how much you deposit each time into the e-wallet. And also the e-wallet does allow you to monitor your daily transactions. So like for the people that like apps to control their lives, this kind of tells you where you spend your money, at which merchant and mm-hmm. how much. And, you know, maybe that's helpful for some.
Indeed. And of course, there is also a need for regulatory frameworks to be put in place to ensure that e-wallet transactions are protected and to ensure that operations are smooth and the transition is smooth going from a cash society to a cashless society. Now, we won't be completely cashless, but majority cashless. And so the central bank has previously also announced measures that they're looking at these kind of e-wallet frameworks. And they have also gotten behind this push for quite a while now. So we will be watching this quite closely. But right now, of course, we are heading into the 7:30 news. And then up next, we'll be speaking with Richard McGregor, Senior Fellow at the Lowy Institute on the Taiwan elections. That's happening after the 7:30 news. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.